Hey, hey, hey. This is Lisa A., and you're listening to Who's That Star on LCC Connect at Lansing Community College. Who's That Star is a behind-the-scenes show where I sit down and talk with the employees at the college. This is an inside look at LCC where you will have a chance to learn about their passions, projects, what inspires them both at work and in their personal lives. I'm your host, Lisa Alexander. I'm so excited to get a chance to talk to all the people who make LCC great. This show is for you to get to know the people that work at Lansing Community College a little bit more and see what makes them tick. Are you ready? Okay, let's go see who's today's star. Today on Who's That Star, we have a star that grew up in Foxborough, Massachusetts. When he was in high school, he spent most of his time riding his horse, playing volleyball, as well as working. This star has always had a strong work ethic. Some of his first jobs were mowing lawns, shoveling snow, babysitting, and delivering newspapers. He remembers getting his first real job at O'Reilly's Rexall Drugstore. After graduating from high school, he went to Massachusetts College of Pharmacy, but transferred to Northeastern University and earned his bachelor's degree in psychology. He moved to Michigan to attend Wayne State University, where he earned his master's and doctoral degree in physiological psychology. After college, he spent time doing biomedical research at Sinai Hospital in Detroit, the National Institute of Neurological Disorders and Stroke, and Wayne State School of Medicine. Then he took a faculty position at St. Anselm College in New Hampshire, and then after spending a year as a stay-at-home dad, he began his career at LCC. This star spent 9 years in the U.S. Marine Corps Reserve. He has black belts in Taekwondo second degree, the American cane system, and defensibility for people who use wheelchairs, and a brown belt with 3 stripes in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. His hobbies include hiking, fishing, but mostly the hiking now serves the purpose of helping him go birding and taking bird pictures. He also collects old books and more recently bird-related artwork. And he's also a peer reviewer with the Higher Learning Commission. Okay, are you ready to learn who's today's star? Today's star is Mark Callen. Mark, we are so glad to have you here on Who's That Star?
Thanks.
Well, I'm ready to get started because it's a lot of stuff that I unpacked in that introduction that I found really cool. First, can you tell me about your work here at LCC and some of your roles?
So I have 2 main roles. One of them, of course, is being a psychology professor. Mm-hmm. But I'm also the college's accreditation liaison officer.
Wow.
And for the past year and through the rest of this year, that's taking up about 2/3 of my workload because we have our 10-year reaffirmation of accreditation coming up. And the accreditation is essential for our students to have access to federal financial aid.
Mm.
Colleges typically have a team of 6 to 10 people doing the work. I'm doing it for LCC because I'm also a peer reviewer for the Higher Learning Commission. But it's a lot of work.
I can't imagine. When you talk about the accreditation of a college and you talked about how it impacts financial aid, is there any other areas where it impacts?
The accreditation covers everything the college does, absolutely everything. And one of the reasons why I'm able to take the lead on this is that I've been here for 27 years.
Okay.
And I've been on a lot of very important committees. I was president of the Academic Senate. So I know a lot about the college. I know a lot of the people across the college. And with a fair amount of help collecting information, I'm able to cover everything that we do.
Wow, that's great. And we're lucky to have you because you got that inside look of what reviewers are looking for. So I think that's great. having you here, that's an asset for LCC. You mentioned before you came to LCC that you were a stay-at-home dad. I wanted to know how you transitioned from being a stay-at-home dad to coming to LCC. So how did you get started at LCC?
So I was teaching in New Hampshire, and my then wife was a clinical neuropsychologist, and she was offered a really good position here in Michigan. So I resigned a tenure track position for her career.
Okay.
In retrospect, I might not do that, but I came back to Michigan and started applying for jobs, and it takes a while. So I stayed home with the kids for a year.
Okay.
And I was offered a position at Wayne State by a professor I'd known in graduate school. She had become a dean.
Oh, okay.
We always got along really well, and she wanted me to come back to Wayne State and run her lab. But she didn't want me to teach, and I loved to teach.
Mm.
And she wanted me to focus on her research, not my research.
Okay.
And I was offered the position at LCC, so I took it.
Okay.
And it was an interesting transition because I didn't have to do research, don't have to do scholarship. Being a professor at LCC compared to that world can be a relatively easy job. There's a lot of work,
mm-hmm.
but you don't have to get grants and you don't have to publish.
Right.
So I had that drive and I needed to look for other things to do. And that's what eventually led me in the direction of first writing a couple of OER textbooks.
Right, okay.
And then getting involved with the Academic Senate. I was already on the curriculum committee. That led to being a peer reviewer, which led to being accreditation liaison officer. And so as much as I love to teach, I need something more so that you don't get burnt out.
Right. No, I agree.
You don't get worn out.
You make a great point, and it sounds like you've built on your career here at LCC by starting out in one area. And that's the thing about it, and that's why I like it here. I think that if you have the desire to do more, they'll allow you to do that, right? They'll
Absolutely.
Let you get into different places that you have interest. And as long as you're willing to work to try to do that, I think you're a great example of that. And how to keep yourself engaged, right? You can't just sit and think everything is going to come and give you that joy. You got to go out and look for it and search. So I respect you so much for that. But to me, it seems like it would have to be hard where you did that research. And it sounds like that was something that was really interesting. Do you still feel like, oh, I wish I could still do some more research? You ever have that itch still?
Absolutely. The incredible thing when you think about research, my degree is in physiological psychology, so I studied the brain.
Right.
And when we wrapped up a set of experiments and published a paper, we knew something about how the brain functioned that no one else in the world had ever known.
Yeah.
And that's an excitement. You know, I love outdoor stuff. I wish I could be a great explorer.
Right.
But people have been to both poles. They've been to the highest and lowest places. You know, there are not that many places that you can be the first person to ever be there.
Right.
But when you publish a research paper, you know something no one else knows. And that's exciting.
Yeah, that's cool. I never thought of it that way. But yeah, you kind of always on a new adventure. Mm-hmm. And you get to share what you've learned. What are some of your hobbies? We talked about the bird watching, and I'm interested in how you got into that.
So birding and bird photography are something that I've always liked. I started out, got some decent camera equipment when my kids were in sports and took a lot of sports pictures. But every once in a while, I'd see an interesting bird and I'd take a picture, and I've got a couple of interesting bird pictures on some of the books that I've written. And so I had an interest that was kind of in the back of my mind. And then when my younger son went to Cornell University, he met his girlfriend. And after they graduated, she continued to work for the Cornell Ornithology Lab and was very interested in birds. My son John got interested in birds. They got really serious about it. So I thought, well, I've always had it as an interest. This sounds fun. And I'm probably not too far away from retirement.
Right.
So I said, let me start studying birds, going out looking for birds. Let me buy some nice camera equipment, start practicing bird photography. And so I've been doing that for a couple of years now. I'm nowhere near my son and his girlfriend's lists. They're probably getting close to 600 species. I've got a couple hundred species, but I have a weird bird list that is finally hit 30 birds, where I have a picture of the species with its nictitating membrane closed over its eye.
Mm.
So that's my weird bird list.
What made you get on that? Like, you just saw one bird and then you said, I'm going to start trying to find and see if I see other one?
I saw a sandhill crane at Kensington Metro Park.
Mm.
And as I was going through the pictures, one of its eyes looked totally bizarre. And I thought about it and I thought, do birds have a nictitating membrane? So I had to look it up, and they do. And then somewhere along the line, I saw another one and I said, oh, this has got to be my list. And now every time I take bird pictures, I might take 1,000 pictures of 100 birds, and I go through and there's another one. Just a couple of weeks ago, I added the tufted titmouse to my list of nictitating membrane pictures. It's a small, really pretty bird with a crest on its head. Again, it was at Kensington Metro Park, which is a great place to go.
Well, see, I've always rolled by, you know, on the highway going down 96. I've rolled by that part, right? And I've never been there, and I've always was curious. So you go there, are you riding your bike? Are you driving? Like, what type of park is it that it allows
you? So they have an 8-mile trail.
Okay.
That's great for running and riding bikes or rollerblading.
Okay.
So I've run there. I've biked there. I don't do as much since I had my hips replaced. Great fishing there.
Yeah.
And they have a small nature center and several nature trails.
Hmm.
And people feed the birds. So they take their kids out. The birds will land in your hand.
No way.
One day I was trying to take a picture of a bird and one landed on my head to look at what I was looking at.
So and they're very friendly.
They're very friendly there.
And that's good to know. Because I'm going to tell you, if a bird pops on me, I'm shoo, fry, shoo. I'm running up out of there. And so I may cause some disruption. So I needed to know that.
What you should do is go there, put some bird seed in your hand, hold it out in front of you. And I'll tell you the amazing thing. When a bird lands on your hand, you can feel its claws, but you don't feel any weight.
Hmm.
That's how they're able to fly. They're so light. Right. It's amazing.
Yeah, no, that it sounds interesting, and it sounds like you found something that you're passionate about. I was going to ask you, like, what is your favorite bird, and what's your favorite Michigan bird specifically?
There are several that I really, really love, but I think the one that's been my favorite the longest is the northern flicker.
Mm.
It's an absolutely beautiful woodpecker that, unlike most woodpeckers, eats primarily off the ground.
Mm.
They do have them in Michigan, but last year I saw 2 endangered species in Michigan, one of which is a very famous endangered species called the Kirtland's warbler.
Mm.
And so I went on a tour and then went up a couple times myself to get some good pictures on a sunny day. The other was the piping plover. But I would have to say I'll put the Kirtland's warbler up as my number one Michigan bird.
Wow. There's like so much information that I don't know about birds, right?
Well,
like,
me too. There's so much to learn.
Yeah. Well, do you have any other hobbies that you like?
Well, I started traveling around the country.
Oh, to do bird watching or birding?
Yeah. Last year, I actually took 3 trips to Wisconsin to get clear pictures of whooping cranes, which are also endangered. But 2 years ago, I drove over the bridge, turned left on Route 2, and went to Spokane, Washington.
Really?
And along the way, stopped at 7 national wildlife refuges. The northern Great Plains are just gorgeous, birds everywhere. It's amazing. I've traveled down to Texas to go birding with my son. So that keeps me pretty busy, and I'm hiking when
right.
I do it. So there are a lot of places that I love to hike all over the country. So I travel all around the United States now, although I haven't yet gotten to Alaska or Hawaii, but they're on the list.
Wow, yeah. You get to travel and bird watch, and that's cool. I think I'm going to start paying attention a little bit more, because I think I went somewhere and somebody almost scared the stew out of me because they saw an eagle. And I guess you don't really see them much here where we were going. I don't know.
Bald eagles, they're all over Michigan this area.
Oh, well, I don't know, because the way he hollered, it was like, oh, my God.
I'll go up to Maple River State Game Area, about 10 miles north of St. John's. Lots of eagles and ospreys. I regularly catch pictures of osprey that have captured fish.
Okay, I'm going to have to check out that. Okay, so birding, is this a subject that you geek out about, or do you have another interest area that you geek out about?
So I did take an ornithology class, the biology of birds, and I did just sign up for another course through Cornell University on woodpeckers. And I spent a week at Cornell University a couple summers ago taking a birding course and living in a dorm. But there's a different subject that I really geek out about, and that's parliamentary procedure.
Oh, my God. You know what? That is so hard to me, okay? Like, and I say this because I wish I knew that you geeked out on this, because I think you could have gave me a really good crash course on what you need to do. Because, you know, you get into a meeting, and if you've never been exposed to that, it's so foreign, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know that I even understood what that meant, or I didn't pay attention, because it was never my role to have to run a meeting in such a way where I needed to know all of these rules and stuff. And then I got the Robert rules. Okay, but it was like too much going on in that, right? So what made you geek out on that?
I've always liked rules and protocol, but what really got me started on studying it was when I was president of the Academic Senate.
Okay.
And they're supposed to follow Robert's rules. They do a lot better now than they used to. But what people don't appreciate is when the presiding officer, so the president of the Senate or the chair of a committee, knows the rules and follows the rules, the meeting becomes much more efficient.
Mm.
So to take example, the way things still sometimes work in the Academic Senate is somebody will bring up an issue and people will start talking, and faculty talk, and they talk, and they talk, and they talk, and it can go on forever. When there's a motion, then people realize we need to dispose of this motion. And dispose doesn't mean a negative thing. It means we need to come to a decision.
Right.
Now, you can pass the motion can fail, or you can dispose of it by referring it to a committee or postponing it to the next meeting. But once there's a motion on the floor, people realize there's a decision that needs to be made.
Mm-hmm.
And at a recent Senate meeting, I called a point of order. And I said, the debate needs to be on the motion that's on the floor. And so that keeps people focused, and meetings become more efficient, and things get done.
Well, I agree with you on that. I feel like a lot of times, especially with a topic that gets people like blood going, they tend to wander into another direction, right? And I didn't realize that that's what the parliamentarian was for. So that helps me.
Yeah.
But, like, understanding the order, right? Like, okay, you say point of order. How do you understand?
To me, it's logical.
Yeah.
So it just makes sense to me. And that's one of the reasons why I geek out on it, because it does make sense. But you have to practice. You have to do it. And then it becomes a habit. And what's most important is it has to be the presiding officer.
See, now, I was in an organization where they had, you know, the president or chair or whoever, they were leading the meeting, right? So yes. They needed to know, okay, what the point of order meant like that. But the parliamentarian, if the president or whoever's leading the meeting doesn't know, then they go to that expert, right?
Yes.
And is that what you are? Because I know they have associations where you can do the parliamentarian, and so then they can take a test or two.
I belong to two associations, the National Association of Parliamentarians and the American Institute of Parliamentarians. I have studied for taking the exams, and I was starting to right before COVID hit.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just set it aside. But I've read Robert's Rules of Order from cover to cover.
Oh my gosh, I don't know.
And I've also read,
that's so funny because that is.
I've also read the American Institute of Parliamentarians Standard Code, which is a different thing.
Yeah.
And it becomes important, just to give you an example, the motion to table something. People do not understand what that motion means. First, in Robert's Rules of Order, there's no such thing as a motion to table.
Mm.
There's a motion to lay on the table, and then later in the meeting, there can be a motion to pick it up from the table. In the American Institute of Parliamentarians, there is a motion to table, and it means we're not going to talk about this anymore.
Oh.
And that motion in Robert's Rules of Order is a motion to postpone indefinitely, which is different than a motion to postpone definitely. See the geeking out?
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Like, everybody, it appears, need to know Robert Rules of Order.
If not you- really. Everybody needs to know the basics. And then it's the presiding officer, perhaps consulting the parliamentarian, who are responsible for the more detailed issues. So if the average person knows the basics, a motion gets seconded, a motion can be amended, or it can be referred to a committee, and then there's a vote. Those basics are all the average person in the meeting needs to know.
Mm.
And that they direct all communication to the chair. In a committee, things can be a bit more relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
But they communicate to the presiding officer, and they debate the issues, not the people. So I could say my distinguished colleague, Lisa, and oh, I should never say Lisa, my distinguished colleague, Senator Alexander, had an interesting idea, but I don't say, Lisa, you're crazy. What are you talking about? You keep it civil.
Most
respect.
You
keep it directed to the presiding officer. And if you just know those basics, the presiding officer leads you through the meeting, and you don't have to know all those little details.
Well, I mean, like, that's so cool. And I think I must be geeking out, but it caused me so much distress, right? And when you don't know that power that someone else does know, you don't know if you're sounding stupid or not, right? Like, you don't know if what you said was wrong or right. I'm interested in that. But I got so confused with what this meant, what that meant, when you're supposed to do this, when you're supposed to not do so. So it turned me off totally, right? But I think if I had someone who was able to, okay, boom, you need this, you need to do this. If you're leading a meeting, you don't need to be parliamentarian if you don't know what you're doing. That's the number one thing. But Mark, I think you have so much knowledge, you know, a lot of stuff, and it seems like you've had a interesting life. Like, we just only got to talk about a little bit of it, but I'm so glad that you took time to come today.
I really think
like we got other things that I think people would be interested to know about you, like what the research part of your life was like. And I know as an academic advisor, I've heard what a great teacher you are. Students enjoy your class, right? And so I think that's a good testament to the interest that you take. But before we close out, anything that you'd like to say, anything that you like to let our audience know about you?
So I'll give you a quick story on how I went into the field of psychology.
Okay.
when I was in high school and I went to work at the drugstore, which was my first regular job 50 years ago.
Mm.
So that's why I'm getting close to retirement. In the town of Foxborough, they closed a state hospital, and there were several schizophrenic patients who were living in a halfway house near the center of town.
Mm-hmm.
And they came into the drugstore sometimes to get medication, but typically to get either cigarettes or candy. One of them was a guy named Tom, and he thought I was God. So he would wait by the door for permission to enter the store, because you can't enter into the presence of God without permission.
Wow.
And he had a girlfriend who did not share that delusion. But she wasn't sure, so she would wait. Now, one night, she came to the drugstore by herself. It was pouring rain, I mean, torrential downpour. And she was all huddled up, and she had something under her jacket.
Uh-huh.
Now, I was 16, 17 years old. The first thing I thought was, she's got Tom's severed head under her jacket. And she's standing by the door, and she's going, Mark, Mark, Mark. And I'm trying to ignore her.
Yeah.
And she's going, Mark, Mark. So finally I walked over, and I said, hey, I don't remember her name, but I said, hey, how you doing? And she said, I have something to show you. And I said, okay. And she opened up her coat, and she had a kitten. And she was trying so hard to protect that kitten from the rain. And she said, the staff got us this kitten for us to take care of, and I wanted to share it with you. And just in case I was God, she wanted me to bless it as well.
Mm.
And I realized in that instant, one, what a jerk I had been.
Mm.
But I also realized that she was not a schizophrenic. What I realized was she was a person who had schizophrenia.
Mm, okay.
And that was why I went into the field of psychology.
You could see the difference.
I could see her as a person,
right,
who was suffering
from a disease versus her being a disease.
Right.
Well, okay. That's a great way to end it, and a great way to see how you got, you know, involved and engaged and help people. And, you know, that's a good thing, and you're still helping people, and you're helping us. So I really appreciate you taking the time to come on Who's That Star today.
Thanks.
You've been listening to Who's That Star. I'm Lisa A., and you can listen to this episode of Who's That Star and other shows from LCC Connect anytime online at lccconnect.org. Thank you for listening. Catch me next time to find out who's that star.